We have a platform, a set of developer tools, a single consistent API and data model, and today a network of over 700 healthcare organizations that we're connected to, along with an ecosystem of thousands and thousands of developers.
Welcome to the Redox Podcast. I'm your host, Nico Skivaski, co-founder and president of Redox, where we are on a mission to make healthcare data useful and in turn enable the frictionless adoption of technology in healthcare. The Redox Podcast explores the intersection between healthcare and technology. How is tech making a difference? What are the barriers to adoption and how are they being overcome? We talk to some of our industry's brightest minds, up-and-coming technologists, and health tech legends that have paved the way for what's to come. One thing is certain, healthcare will change dramatically over the coming years. My hope is that you'll leave these conversations with a bit more context, along with a jolt of optimism to continue working for a better healthcare. With that in mind, I welcome you to the Redox Podcast.
Hey everyone, today we have a special bonus episode. My co-founder and Redox CEO, Luke Bonney, was on the Powered by Battery podcast that's produced by Battery Ventures, who of course led our Series C round of financing back in April of 2019. Beyond sharing some of our founding story, Luke discusses challenges that many of us face in health tech during this pandemic and the subsequent economic downturn. I thought it'd be worth sharing this podcast episode here, as the content is quite applicable to our audience. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome you to the Powered by Battery podcast, powered by the Redox podcast. Thanks.
On this episode of Powered by Battery, we chat with Luke Bonney, the CEO of healthcare IT company Redox. Bonney's company is in some ways right in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. It supplies technology to help facilitate telehealth services and even diagnostic virus testing. What's more, Redox's almost all remote workforce offers lessons to other companies that have had to quickly spin up remote operations recently. Have a listen. Well, Luke Bonney, welcome to Powered by Battery.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's just dive in. Battery does a lot of investing in companies that are based in, you might say, out of the way places, at least for venture capital investment. And Redox, your company, is based in Wisconsin. So tell me what it's like to be a cutting edge software company based in Wisconsin.
Sure. Yeah. And the first thing I would say is we were founded in Wisconsin and a lot of our DNA is here in Wisconsin, but we are a fully remote company as well. And obviously we'll talk about that as what that meant for us as the impact of COVID-19 was felt. But I think we at our core still have the DNA of being a Wisconsin company. And for us, being founded in Madison, was really a no-brainer. My personal path to Madison was, of course, a little convoluted. I graduated in 2008, not dissimilar from what's going on today. wasn't exactly a thriving job market. I was a pre-med student who decided I didn't want to be a doctor. I had worked at a software company and fell in love with technology. And the job that I ended up accepting was at that point, this little company called Epic. Which did electronic health records out here in Wisconsin. And at that point, I literally couldn't put it on a map. I came out here, loved it. Madison, I think similar to a lot of college towns, has incredible intellectual capital. University of Wisconsin is a world-class university. So that plus a tech company of over 10,000 people, there's actually a thriving tech scene here. With a number of startups, a growing number of venture-backed startups and VCs themselves. So it's been great.
Yeah, the Epic story is amazing. It's sort of like the biggest tech company you've never heard of, right? You said 10,000 employees?
Yeah, 10,000 employees, and their software touches north of 55% of, I don't know what the exact number is, but north of 55% of patients in the country. Basically, most of the health systems you've ever heard of are run on Epic's software.
Wow. Okay. So you and I think a co-founder or two were all working at Epic. When did something happen that gave you the idea for Redox?
Yeah. There's three of us who are co-founders of Redox and still run the company. Myself, James, who's our CTO, and Nico, who is our head of special projects. We all left for different reasons. There wasn't like an event or anything like that. I think we were all ready for the next chapter in our lives. And the three of us actually came together. The first project we worked on was called 100 Health. And the tagline for 100 Health was we were going to start 100 digital health companies in Madison over the next 5 years. It was basically
That's ambitious.
Yeah, quite ambitious. It was basically an early stage digital health incubator. And it was really, it was founded on two core ideas. Number one, in the past few years, healthcare had really gone digital. The Affordable Care Act incentivized the adoption of electronic health records as we went from paper to electronic. So that was idea number one. And idea number two was Madison had this really unique opportunity because of all this very specific talent that was highly specialized in healthcare IT. So we said digital health is going to explode, and we think Madison is going to be one of the places it comes out of. And Redox was really born out of running 100 Health. So we actually had a first cohort of companies, seven different digital health companies. We worked with those guys for close to a year. And what we saw was that scaling data integration in healthcare for cloud-based applications was terrible. It was the number one thing holding back their ability to integrate. So we said, if we want to really have impact and really do something good in healthcare, let's solve that problem. And that was really the birth of Redox.
Maybe walk us through that. Maybe give me an example of how that works in practice, how the integration doesn't work well.
Yeah. So just to describe specifically what we do, we make healthcare data integration easy and scalable for applications of all shapes and sizes. If you're building an application that needs to exchange healthcare data, we are your absolute best friend. So we have a platform, a set of developer tools, a single consistent API and data model, and today a network of over 700 healthcare organizations that we're connected to, along with an ecosystem of thousands and thousands of developers. So our customers are anybody from early stage startups to large enterprises who need to exchange healthcare data. And we help them connect up to anybody, anywhere from a small independent physician practice up to some of the largest healthcare organizations in the world, like Cleveland Clinic or Intermountain or any of those folks.
Because that was my question, is just what kinds of apps are we talking about? So it sounds like these could be apps made by startups or apps developed by hospitals and other medical groups.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the time of COVID-19, I think we are, as a country, becoming more aware of a lot of this technology. But think about all the people you've heard of who have interacted with their doctor remotely, whether that's a chat or a video visit. Folks like those have been our customers for a long time. And now what we're seeing is demand for their products are exploding.
Okay, well, that was kind of the next big area I wanted to talk about, is how, you know, you guys are a health tech company operating in the middle of the biggest healthcare crisis we've seen in decades or longer. I'm not sure, certainly since I've been alive. So let's kind of break down how it's affecting you. So number one is you guys do kind of play in telehealth, it sounds like. So what's going on with your business?
Yeah, so I'll talk first maybe about impact to our customers, and then I can talk second about impact to our team and all of our Redoxers. So as a platform company, we think about our customers kind of as a portfolio where we have categories of customers in different technology verticals. And you can imagine that some of those technology categories have been hit really hard. So folks that are really focused on elective procedures, you know, elective procedures have basically gone to zero as part of COVID-19. But at the same time, we have part of our customer portfolio that is experiencing generational demand for their technology. Telemedicine is one of those examples. We call these groups high demand verticals. So telemedicine falls into this. We're seeing a huge amount of demand for remote patient monitoring. So anything we can do to get patients out of the hospital and at home. So how could we monitor a patient from their home and still provide great care? And then the third category would be diagnostics. So you can imagine all the different ways we could accelerate testing for COVID-19. And this has been really interesting for us, because as we partner with these kind of different categories of our customers, for some groups, it's being there as a trusted partner to do whatever we can to help them through this. For those in high demand, we're developing rapid deployment models, different marketing campaigns to see how we could partner with them to accelerate their growth as much as possible. And we've seen examples of, we've had a couple telemedicine groups go from literal first touch to completely live and impacting patients in less than 10 days, which in healthcare is an amazing feat.
So to break it down, like with that telehealth example, then I want to go back to diagnostics and testing, because that sounds super interesting too. But with the telehealth, exactly what is your technology doing? Like, who are you in that equation? Who are you connecting and what's it doing?
So think about our customer as the company that is building a telehealth application. And at its core, what a telehealth application needs to do is connect a patient with a provider in a way that is secure and allows them to interact effectively. So the question is really, what data does that application need in order for its users to have a great interaction? Our job is to go and get that data for that application. So a telehealth application, let's take a company you've probably heard of it called Teladoc, who's a customer of ours, who we work with all the time. The first question is, what's the scheduled appointment? When is that patient going to be seen? Who are they going to see? Which doctor? Second question is, what's that patient's existing medical information? What's their allergies? What's their medications? What's their existing vital signs? And then what's the outcome of the actual interaction? So is that you know, whatever the clinical note or the order, whatever it needs to be. So our job is to allow that interaction between that patient and that provider in a seamless way, where what we're doing is taking all that data, manipulating it so it goes to where it needs to at whatever healthcare organization is relevant.
Okay. So you guys are some pretty important connective glue, it sounds like, that makes this all happen.
Yeah. Yes. We are critical infrastructure to power a lot of these interactions.
Okay. I want to go back to what you said about diagnostics. You said there's ways we can accelerate testing. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, similarly, we have customers. So if Teladoc is an example, another one of our customers is a group called Precision Genetics. And they're a diagnostic company and have really oriented their business since COVID-19 around how can we help literally accelerate the testing of people like you and me to see if they test positive for COVID-19. So what we're doing there is supporting the ordering of the test. So if you go in and the doctor says, yes, you should get tested, they place that order in their electronic health record, send that order out to Precision Genetics. They process it. They say, you know, it's a saliva sample or whatever, test positive, test negative, send it back. And we're the in-between that's translating all of that data. So we have a number of customers that are basically figured out how to scale COVID-19 testing across entire states. By using existing technology, which is so exciting.
Yeah. Sounds like the government could use your help. So maybe,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're definitely involved in those conversations. I think what's really interesting is is this going to be solved at a federal level? Is it going to be solved at a city, state, or regional level? We're still figuring that out. But yeah, we think there's tons of opportunities for us to be helpful.
And I do want to get back to, you know, kind of the broader, not just business challenges and opportunities, but management challenges that you're facing. But before we do that, let's talk about how this crisis and this whole work from home thing has affected Redox, because you said you guys were already primarily remote, you know, unlike a lot of companies that have had to, you know, super quickly figure out how to run companies on Slack and on Zoom. How has this affected you guys since you were already mostly remote?
Yeah, so I think the first shock of COVID-19 was watching the country and really the major parts of the world shift to this work at home. Our first response was we said, you know, we've been doing this for 5 years. Let's start sharing. So we were the first couple of weeks of COVID-19, we were literally putting on webinars that had hundreds and hundreds of attendees to say, how do you run a company at scale remotely? So that was kind of phase one. What we really got into and kind of how we've been thinking about it is number one, we've tried to be really precise with measuring the impact to capacity. The biggest thing that we're seeing is impact of kids at home is significant.
Right.
Impact of having to take care of sick family members, or if somebody, you know, a team member gets sick. And then just the cognitive load, right? Like we are very open talking about the fact that the world and the kind of heightened level of uncertainty, that's tough to deal with. So every 2 weeks we set up a process where we basically, we survey everybody and we say, where are you? And that gives us information to say, where are we tight, you know, from a capacity standpoint, where is there some room? And then we do a lot to facilitate, you know, what we talk of as the flexing of folks across roles to help out. So that's been number one, is I would say capacity. Number two is just helping people feel connected. We have employee resource groups. I'm sure a lot of folks do, but there's been awesome examples. We have like Tuesday night remote euchre night, like playing cards. We've literally had parents come together and read bedtime stories to different kids.
Oh, wow.
So like it's been an opportunity to really get more intimate and personal with folks. And what we do is we encourage it and then we celebrate it. And then the last thing I would say is I take my job, I think one of my, I would say my top focus in all of this is really chief communication officer. So I really believe that for folks to stay focused and have confidence, they need to feel like they know what's going on. So I think I've recorded something like 15 videos since COVID-19 started, to, you know, 2 to 5 minute videos, just little clips, and published them to the company just to let them know where I'm at, let them know what I'm focused on. And I think that's been huge. And then obviously very frequent communication with our board as needed.
Okay, that's great. That's great. And I know that, you know, pre-COVID, you guys had, partially because you were a mostly remote company, had a big, big focus on company culture. And it sounds like a lot of these things you're doing are really an outgrowth of that, right? Programs you were already running.
Yeah, I'm so thankful. I mean, culture is, you know, at its core is how we behave and how we treat each other. And so much of that is based on the makeup of the company. And, you know, two things. One is, in crises like this, we all show our true colors, and it's so exciting. And I'm so proud of how we've responded. And then on the other side, it also highlights, you know, we were talking about earlier, we have a role to play, which I think is something that I try and talk a lot about. Our work can literally support, combating COVID-19. So we really try and think about, you know, keeping people focused on, we have a job, we have a purpose, and we can have impact.
That's great. It sounds like you're doing a great job anecdotally from what I've heard in the last few minutes, but you are a first time CEO, and you know, a lot of CEOs of gigantic companies are, you know, struggling these days. You had your management challenges, I'm sure, before this pandemic started, and you've got challenges now. How are they different, and how are your priorities different? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a great question. My first response to that is my overall kind of buckets of categories or buckets of priorities haven't shifted. I have four. Number one is people. Number two is strategy. Number three is execution. And number four is cash. And I did not come up with these straight out of what's called the scaling up framework or scaling up methodology. I think what's so different today is within those four buckets, you have to think about them very differently. Number one, we have to recognize, I have to recognize that there's a much higher level of uncertainty. And just knowing that there's a much higher level of uncertainty changes how you think. You got to be more short term. You have to be willing to challenge existing assumptions, right? Like, we have years and years of data that describes conversion rates for our pipeline. We need to go and say, is that going to be true in this new world of COVID-19? We don't know. The availability of cash, whether that's, you know, cash from a customer standpoint, as they are either successful or struggling, cash from an investor standpoint, cash from a federal standpoint. All of us, you know, thinking about the SBA program and the PPP. So the first thing we tried to get really clear on is we have to recognize in this heightened sense of uncertainty, we have to be more short-term focused. We have to challenge our existing assumptions. We just have to recognize that we need to be way more focused on cash specifically. The last thing is test aggressively. Like every week we are testing, saying, here's our new cash plan. Here are the core assumptions. Each of those core assumptions has a test that we are running every week to say, is this true or not true? Because we're going to have to make decisions really quickly.
Right. Now, have you guys had to do RIFs? Have you had to let people go or no?
Up to this point, we've been good. You know, our plan has been, we immediately put in a hiring freeze. We immediately started aligning people around how can we pull costs out? You know, we had a couple co-working spaces that we closed. We found millions of dollars, you know, annualized expense in software we were using. And then some of the most exciting stuff is our engineering team getting really proactive to cut some of our core infrastructure costs. So to this point, we've been able to say, based on our plan, we can stay the course. But I would also just say that, to the previous point, there's a whole bunch of unknowns. And I think that the biggest unknown for us is really the financial impact of COVID-19 on US healthcare.
Right.
What does it mean? So our customers, the healthcare organizations, what does it mean? There's two things. What does it cost them to care for COVID-19 patients? We know that those are negative margin patients. So they literally lose money every day they're treating COVID-19 mm-hmm. patients. And number two, where they typically make up for that is elective procedures, which are basically at zero because of social distancing. So this is just one of those things where we have to be really focused on understanding what is that impact and how does that impact our customers, then ultimately us. So that's what we're testing very, very regularly.
No, that's fascinating. It's interesting because these are positive and negative forces on your business, right? Long-term healthcare policy would seem to play in your favor, right, with the Affordable Care Act and other things, but short term, it's going to be difficult. Who are you? You know, I know you mentioned you're talking to your investors and stuff, but you know, I think we're all kind of flying blind in many respects today. Who are you relying on for news, for advice, for data? I mean, any you know, I'm thinking of this as far as like lessons or resources that other CEOs could take advantage of as well.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I have been leaning on members of the board significantly. The way I think about it is they have their portfolio. So I've been asking them aggressively and regularly, what are you seeing? You have, you know, 10x or, you know, 20x the number of data points in terms of the company. So I've been doing a lot there. I've been doing a lot with trying to talk to CEOs and founders of other companies in our space. I think the people whose businesses are impacted are going to be the most informed, the people who are trying to deeply understand their customers. So other CEOs and founders, our customers would be the third, and not just talk to them, but also watching their behavior. And then the fourth is just our own data that we can produce. So, you know, because of what we do, we can look at traffic volumes and we can look at the, you know, what's trending up and what's trending down and why is it different by different geographies and things like that. So, but it's hard, you know, it's really hard.
Yeah, I was gonna say something we hear, sorry to interrupt, but something we hear from other CEOs too, is that there can almost be too much information and advice, right? You know what I mean? Everybody, because nobody really knows what's going on and can predict it. That's difficult as well, to know when to stop and say, okay, you know, no one really has the answers. I've got to figure this out for myself.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I think the hardest thing is understanding how to separate the broader economic indicators with what's going to specifically impact our market and our customers. And that's really hard. And I think what a lot of people are going through is a study of how interconnected the economy is, which is fascinating, but also gives rise to this like sense of paranoia. Am I thinking of, you know, are we thinking about this in enough detail? And at the end of the day, I just think that the best answer is, at least for us, has been agree on the key indicators that you think have the highest predictive strength and measure them relentlessly. So that's what we've been trying to do.
Okay. Well, trying to kind of end on a brighter note as we think about coming out of this period eventually. You know, we talked about the short-term impact COVID is having on healthcare. As far as, you know, I mean, again, I'm reading the stories too about smaller providers potentially going out of business, you know, because no one's going to the doctor. Longer term, though, I would think you are still very bullish about your opportunities as healthcare changes. What policy changes do you think could come out of this? Or are there policy changes that may, you know, it seems to me might even be helping your business in the long term going forward?
Yeah, I think there was existing policy that was coming into play in 2020 around the 21st Century Cures Act. And we clearly see that as significant tailwinds for our business and for what we're trying to do. That regulation is going to bring down barriers to bring in more technologists. It's going to more closely align payers and bring them into this overall data sharing equation. And really what, you know, I think what people are most excited about is to do more and more to provide more and more regulation infrastructure to empower patients as consumers. So for us, we look at all that and really what it paints a picture of is a growing number of technology companies and applications that we could be there to serve. So from that standpoint, we're super excited and super bullish. And we think the regulatory overall, I mean, we could argue about the different kind of specifics, but overall, we think the regulation is pointed in a really exciting direction. So from that category, really excited about that. There's a second category of regulation, which is like all the regulation that's changed because of a response to COVID-19. And I think telemedicine is a great example. The clearest one is, you know, it's been a 10-year fight to get states and the government to reimburse appropriately for telemedicine visits.
Right.
Guess what happened overnight? we got approval for appropriate reimbursement. Similarly, you know, I think there's been a lot of movement on how we can shift parts of HIPAA in order to serve public health interests, right? How can we, for example, get sick people to beds, right? We have some areas that, you know, are overflowing and some areas that are empty. How can we start to steer folks towards from a capacity standpoint? So the question with that is how much of that is enduring, how much of that's going to stick around versus how much of that goes away after the crisis. And right now, I think the answer is the important stuff like reimbursement for telemedicine visits, that's going to stick around. That's a new normal. And it's a new normal that I think going to benefit all of us.
I would be irresponsible if I didn't, in these, as all the TV ads say, in these uncertain times, in these difficult times, how you and your family are doing personally. Any, you know, you guys doing okay health-wise, and any life hacks or childcare hacks that you want to share with the rest of us?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked the question. I think it's a really important question. This is actually something that I talk about with Redoxers all the time. The things that have been really, there's three things that are really critical to me staying sane throughout all of this. Number one is to just be very explicit with protected family time. So for me, that is 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., no work. It's 100% dedicated to time with my wife, Kelsey, and our 21-month-old son, Zeke. I don't get that 100% of the time, but I try really hard to protect that time. And that's been huge. Number two is for me, daily physical exercise is critical. So I have one quarantine buddy. He's my best friend. He literally lives three blocks away. We do some level of serious physical workout, every day, which has been really critical. And then the third has been, really just a stated agreement with me and Kelsey, my wife, that this is a time to invest in our marriage and in our relationship and to go out of our way to check in with each other, you know, to learn how to operate more effectively as a team, and just to feel stronger as partners. And that, I'm so thankful for that. And I'm so thankful that both of us are able to really both state and then dedicate time to those conversations. But that's really been the bedrock for me.
I love that. CEO management principles applied to marriage. I love it. All right, sounds good. Operating as a team.
You should talk to my wife before. I don't know if we'd go that far.
All right. It's a nice idea, though. It sounds like a blog post. But all right. Anything else we haven't talked about, just about, you know, about healthcare tech going forward, about Redox, about your view on, you know, managing people through these times, anything else that you'd want to share with people?
I guess, yeah, I would just end with one thing that this whole crisis has definitely validated for me is the importance of surrounding yourself with people who you trust and who you admire. And whether that's your team, whether that's your board, whether that's your investors, whether that's, you know, people in your life, a crisis like COVID-19, one of the things that I just feel constantly is just a sense of gratitude that I'm surrounded by people who I really trust and respect, because it allows us to say, what is the problem we need to solve, and then go solve that problem. So I would close with that.
All right. Sounds good. Well, listen, some great insights. I'm glad you're doing well, and best of luck to you guys as you continue to navigate these times.
Awesome. This has been really fun having this conversation with you.
Hey everyone, it is Nico here again. Thanks to our friends, partners, and adult supervision over at Battery Ventures for this episode. If you'd like to hear more founder insight, I'd encourage you to check out the Powered by Battery podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll link to their show in these show notes as well. Next time on the Redox podcast, I'll have the renowned health economist, James Robinson, to talk about what the future of care delivery might look like post-recovery. We haven't even recorded the show yet, so I'm not sure what we're going to get into, but I'm super excited to have that conversation, as I've been following his work for a long time, and I know he's going to bring a lot of insight to us here. So we'll put that out as soon as we can, hopefully within a week, and we'll see you then. Thanks a lot.